That's John Hancock over there. I'm Michael Kelly, and on the celebrity guest line is nothing other than CBS News military analyst, Colonel Jeff McCausland. Colonel, welcome back to the greatest radio station on the planet.
Guys, great to be with you.
Colonel, lots happening in the Russia-Ukraine conflict. President Trump essentially getting Vladimir Zelensky to agree to allow him to be the champion of trying to end this war and surrendering, well, essentially putting his life in the hands of Donald Trump. Vladimir Putin not really wanting to play along, is he?
So far, at least, that's certainly the case. Mr. Putin has made no concessions of any real meaningful nature that I can see. Obviously, they had this long phone call, that is Putin and Mr. Trump, a few days ago. But, you know, you think about it, you know, the United States, I think, has already made a number of significant concessions. We publicly said that Ukraine would not enter NATO. We publicly said Ukraine has to lose some territory. There would be no U.S. troops involved in any peacekeeping operation to enforce a ceasefire were it settled. We would pause cyber operations against Russia. We would have ended Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty, which, trust me, the Kremlin dearly loves. And at the same time, we've also ended programs that were ongoing to monitor the disappearance of Ukrainian children to Russia. About 25,000 or more have disappeared. In return, the only thing that Russians have done is they have agreed to talk about a partial ceasefire of strikes on energy infrastructure. And one of Mr. Putin's senior aides did say, yes, Russia will make a major concession, and that is we won't take more Ukrainian territory. So far, at least, it seems most of the concessions have been by the United States on behalf of Ukraine, as opposed to the Russians coming to the table showing a great interest in seeking a settlement.
And the state of play on the battlefield has been essentially a stalemate for the better part of how long?
Well, it's been a stalemate in the Donbass region down there in the southern part of the southeastern Ukraine, around places like Pokrovsk, et cetera, for the last month or so. In fact, the Ukrainians in some cases have made very minor counteroffensive operations and resecured some territory. However, farther north, up near Kharkiv in the so-called Kursk salient, Russians have counterattacked and basically pushed the Ukrainians out of that particular area, which, of course, is Russian territory. Mm-hmm. That the Ukrainians invaded in August and occupied. And now the Russians have basically pushed them back into Ukraine with the help of somewhere around 12 to 14,000 North Koreans, while at the same time, of course, taking significant casualties in the process.
Yeah, and what's happening, I find fascinating, concerning certainly, but fascinating, Europe's response to all of this. And Germany made a major announcement about its military spending. What was the content of that?
Well, Germany had elections, of course, and now are fixing to inaugurate a new coalition government, most likely headed by a guy named Friedrich Merz, who's the head of the Christian Democratic Union Party, perhaps the most conservative party in Germany. But prior to that new government coming into power in a few weeks, they actually ran through the Bundestag, German parliament, a law whereby Germany could expand its deficit spending. There's very, very severe restrictions on how big a deficit the Germans can achieve that they have had in place for many years. But now they'll be able to spend up to over 1 trillion euros. That's about $1.1 trillion, I should say, on improved defense and on improved infrastructure for the country. So that's very significant. And then at the same time, the European Union has also restricted deficit spending on its members, which may allow as up to $600 billion or more in additional EU-wide spending, particularly on defense.
And this is all a response to the fact that these European, Western European allies of ours now are of the belief that they're going to have to go it alone, perhaps. And then, so now you're seeing this ramped up defense spending. It looks like whatever happens in Ukraine, if there's any kind of peacekeeping force, it's going to be European. Does this portend the end of NATO? Let's start there. Does this portend the end of NATO?
Well, it certainly could. And there have been reports, as there are discussions in the Pentagon about pulling U.S. forces out of Europe. There have been some suggestion reports later denied by the Pentagon that the United States would end any kind of training exercises, large-scale exercises with NATO forces beginning next year, and also that we would pull the Supreme Allied Commander, who has always been an American since the creation of NATO, pull that particular general out of that particular position. Clearly, based on the things that Mr. Trump has said and done, Europeans are becoming more and more concerned about, will the United States stay in NATO, and furthermore, will the United States stay behind its NATO commitments? You know, back to that idea of European expanded defense spending, you know, we've had unheard of things said over the last few weeks as well. In my whole life, I thought I'd never hear a Polish prime minister, as he did publicly say, you know, Poland should consider acquiring nuclear weapons because we can't depend on the United States in order to deter a threat by the Russian Federation. Even this incoming German chancellor seems to be entertaining the idea of Germany acquiring nuclear weapons. And President Macron of France has actually talked about beginning discussions domestically and with his European partners about extending the so-called French nuclear umbrella. They have about 260 or so nuclear weapons across all of Europe, again, because of the widespread belief that we can no longer depend on the United States.
And if you look at the flow of post-World War II history, whether they were Democratic presidents like Truman or Carter, Republicans, Eisenhower, Reagan, there had been a constancy of American foreign policy as it related to involvement in NATO. And though that alliance was strong, now that it has been weakened, and I think it's fair to say that relationship has been weakened.
Yeah.
I don't see, I'm curious to get your thoughts, simply having a new administration come in behind it is not really a guarantee to Europe that, you know, things couldn't switch right back, you know, 4 years hence. So in a real fundamental sense, this NATO relationship has changed forever. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's true. And we need to, I think, keep a couple things in mind. One is the only time the Article 5 security guarantee, you know, all the allies come together if one is attacked, the only time in history that was ever evoked was after 9/11, when all our European allies that we voted to come to the support of the United States after we were attacked. And NATO countries contributed to the war in Afghanistan. In fact, that was actually a NATO operation. So the senior American general for all those years in Afghanistan was Stuhl Haddon. He was commander of all U.S. forces. He was also commander of all NATO forces. Few people probably realize that as a percentage of population, the country that lost the most soldiers in Afghanistan was actually Canada. And over 1,000 NATO soldiers died in the war in Afghanistan. Of course, 2,500 Americans died as well. So they have certainly come to the forefront in that particular regard. And, you know, when Mr. Biden was elected back in 2020, there was this real question. I went to Europe a lot, spoke to a lot of Europeans. Their question to me was, hey, who's the aberration? Was Donald Trump for 4 years from 2016 to 2020 the sort of aberration that kind of popped up in a sort of populist manner? But the United States will now return to Joe Biden, who's a very traditional believer in NATO and those aspects of foreign policy. You suggest who's the aberration, Biden or Trump? So, you know, with the reelection of Mr. Trump in 2024, for the Europeans, that question has been answered. So our ability to move back to that history and reestablish the trust that they had with us for about 80 years, pretty difficult to accomplish, even if a new administration were to be elected.
Colonel Jeff McCausland is our guest, and with the United States kind of retreating a bit from its leadership, I guess, in Europe/NATO, one of the things the president talked incessantly about on the campaign was China. Are we redirecting the focus that direction, or are we withdrawing from the world?
Well, to some degree, it actually is withdrawing from the world. Now, we might put more economic pressure on China, and we're witnessing that, of course, in the expanded tariffs. So there's supposed to be a summit coming up between the president and President Xi, probably around June. But we have to understand there's a ripple effect. When our European allies begin to believe by statements and actions the United States is not standing on its commitments, it ripples across to Asia. People need to keep in mind that about 70% of all South Koreans actually believe South Korea should have nuclear weapons to deter threats by North Korea or potentially China. And we have restrained that particular effort by our willingness to commit, you know, security guarantees to South Korea. The same is true with Japan. And there's little doubt that those countries could, in fact, create nuclear weapons if they want to. If you were in Taiwan right now, can you be assured that the United States would rush to defend Taiwan if it was threatened by the Chinese? Mr. Biden was very outspoken about his willingness for the United States to do that. Frankly, Mr. Trump's been pretty doggone noncommittal. And people probably missed the fact that while all this was going on, the great explosion of the meeting in the Oval Office between Trump and Zelensky, for example, there was a Chinese naval flotilla of several ships that circumnavigated Australia, much to the Australian surprise, and conducted a live fire exercise in the Tasmanian Sea between Australia and New Zealand. And they basically were saying to the Australians and New Zealand and other Asian allies, we're going to do this because we can. And you might wonder if the United States will come to your aid if need be.
Wow. One of the great pleasures of being on KMOX is getting to visit with you. What a great insight from Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS News military analyst. Have a great week.